This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A new pilot program in western North Carolina is showing promising results for bail reform in the state. The program makes several pretrial reforms, including outfitting officers with a pocket card checklist to determine whether a citation should be issued instead of arrest. And it pushes for no cash bail and prompt judicial review of bond decisions. The program launched in Haywood and Jackson counties in January, and the early results are in. Joining us in the studio to share her analysis of the findings is scholar Jessica Smith. She is W.R. Keenan Jr. Distinguished Professor at the UNC School of Government, and she joins us now. Jesse, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Last time we had you on the show, we were talking in the abstract about bond reform and what could be done, and there was a program already underway in Haywood and Jackson counties. You were part of at least doing the research. Tell us a little bit about what happened in those counties.
Well, the project came about because well over a year ago, a Blue Ribbon Commission formed by our former Chief Justice recommended that North Carolina engage in pilot projects on bail reform. And Judicial District 30B, which is Haywood and Jackson in western North Carolina, was tapped to be one of those pilot projects. And I became involved in that process, which was a pretty lengthy one to get it up and running, started with meeting with broad group of stakeholders, educating them about issues. Then working with them over months to implement or agree to and then implement a basket of consensus reforms. You mentioned a couple of them, but there are other ones that were in that basket as well. And all of the reforms went into effect January 1st. And we're now in the evaluation phase where we're looking at, did they get the objectives, the metrics that they wanted, and perhaps were any unintended consequences created.
So let's talk about what we need, what reforms that, as you say, there was a consensus, something needed to be done. What was wrong? What is wrong with the system? And then we'll talk about how they addressed it in this pilot.
Sure. Well, in Haywood and Jackson County, the stakeholders want what pretty much everybody wants from our criminal justice system, which is an fair and effective system. And when we're talking about effective, they're primarily concerned with public safety and efficient use of taxpayer resources. And what the research is showing is that the current bail system, as we've talked about before, is failing to get us those objectives. There are concerns that have been raised about fairness in the system in terms of treatment of poverty and certain racial groups. But also, there's research that indicates the system is undermining public safety goals and also is making poor use of taxpayer resources in terms of unnecessary pretrial incarcerations in county jails, which taxpayers pay for.
So let's do a quick review, starting with the fairness question, and then we'll look at the public safety aspects of our current money bail system. Just a quick review to talk about some of the concerns that are expressed.
Yeah. Well, on the issue of fairness, it's long been understood that the primary factor about whether a person gets released pretrial or not is whether they have money to pay a secured bond. And so that in itself is thought to be unfair when there's differences based on the amount of wealth you have. But there's research that now shows that when low-level people are detained pretrial, not because they're risky, but because they're poor, they're also significantly more likely to experience negative case outcomes in terms of getting convictions, getting carceral sentences, and getting longer sentences.
And you say low-level, you're talking about low-level
misdemeanors.
Crimes.
Yeah. Let's just talk about misdemeanors. Right. And so those are some of the fairness issues. Racial disparities in the system have been documented for decades. But it's really the research about public safety and cost that has really captured attention, that has crossed over and really spans the ideological spectrum. And what folks have come to understand is that the current system is undermining safety. When you're using money to determine whether someone gets out of jail, it doesn't keep wealthy people in jail. And I was talking to a prosecutor recently who was expressing frustration that he was dealing with a drug trafficking defendant. And when you're trying to guess the amount of money bail, you're literally guessing because they don't report their income, he said, on the tax return. And in that case, they guessed wrong. They set a multi-million-dollar bail, and the person, the drug trafficker, made the bond and was able to get out. When dangerous people have money and can bond out, that undermines safety. But the other thing is that the research that shows when you detain low-level people, you know, you may think, well, detaining everybody makes us safer, but when you detain low-level people, once they're out, they're actually more likely to commit new crimes. There was a big study in Harris County, Texas, low-level defendants who are detained, once they get out, 30% more likely to commit a felony.
And that's because they may have lost a job while they were incarcerated, even that just waiting for a bond hearing. You can be in jail for days, right?
That's right.
And of course, your contact with the criminal justice system, that becomes known. A lot of connections break in the community. And so these are some of the reasons that that might suggest why people get involved deeper in crime from these rather low-level crimes that they were initially charged with. So what happened in Haywood and Jackson County?
Well,
were the changes?
So the stakeholders heard all that research, and they looked at their jail population. And they decided, this wasn't a project that was put on them. They came together and looked at those issues and decided we need to change the way we're doing business. And so over a period of months, they explored the different options for them. Now, in that jurisdiction, they don't have a lot of resources. They don't have a public defender. They don't have pretrial services. So they're more limited than a place, say, compared to Durham, might be in terms of options. But what they decided on is they decided they wanted a better and more sophisticated way of deciding which defendants really needed to be held pretrial and which defendants could just be released into the community. So they developed a new framework for examining and determining who those defendants were. They also decided they're going to do prompt judicial review for all defendants so that low-level defendants wouldn't be sitting in jail for weeks or months without being seen by a judge. They decided, because of the significant ramifications of pretrial detention, to involve defense counsel earlier in the process so that defense counsel meets with the defendant, gets their record, and can advocate at that first appearance. And they also adopted policies to encourage citations and summonses instead of arrest in appropriate cases. So that was essentially the basket of reforms.
Let's start with that last one. That means a little bit of training. Police officers now walking out, really going around with a pocket card to try to make decisions about whether to bring somebody to jail or not, right?
That's right. And I'm kind of bummed that you chose that one as the first one, because that was the one reform that we didn't see significant results with. That may be an implementation issue. It was the other ones that really resulted in significant changes.
So let's talk about those, the ones that resulted in some change.
Sure. Well, one of the most significant things we saw is that the percentage of cases that were issued a money bond decreased substantially. And thinking about non-financial conditions, which are unsecured bonds, don't require money, written promise, those kind of things, they were 12 percentage points higher in the relevant period. That's significant. And there was a parallel decrease in imposition of secured bonds. But importantly, you know, folks worry that if more people are going to be allowed out, that you're going to see higher non-appearance rates in courts. But the study didn't define that. The study found, even though more people were released pretrial, no statistically significant increase in failures to appear for court.
So if that decision to release without bond happened after they were brought in, because I thought maybe those cards and the fact that they weren't brought in the first place was one factor. So what determined now? Why did things change in terms of not imposing a cash bond?
Right. Well, what happened is that's the new decision-making framework that they had. Before, they really had this unstructured judgment process with a bond table that was being used that recommended bond amounts for offense levels. They really changed that. And what they did is they created a flow chart that complies with entirely with North Carolina statutes, but requires the decision makers to have a more nuanced view of who this defendant is and what kind of risk they present. For example, is it a really low-level offense? Well, if it's a low-level offense, then you ask a series of questions like, is it domestic violence, which potentially could escalate? Did it involve a firearm, distribution of drugs? If it doesn't, there was a presumption of non-financial release. If it did, they would go into the statutorily required determination of, do I need to impose a secured bond to protect the public and other statutory factors? So it was a real change in how they were sorting defendants into financial or non-financial conditions.
And they got to that sort a lot quicker, so people weren't languishing in jail waiting for that hearing, right?
Well, certainly magistrates were using that at the very first determination. Judges were using it at the subsequent determinations as well.
Let's talk about those subsequent determinations, or even at the very first one, the idea that we'd have an attorney present now and provide legal aid, which was intended for both counties, but not both counties got it, right?
That's right. And actually turned out out to be really interesting that they didn't. There was an unavailability of lawyers at the front end in Jackson County. So in both counties, they did the prompt hearings, but only Haywood County defendants had counsel. And what happened, interestingly, and this is just first quarter, we're continuing the evaluation, is that defendants in Haywood who had the lawyers were 50% of them had their bonds modified at that first judge appearance, compared to only 30 in Jackson. That suggests something is really valuable about having a lawyer to advocate on your behalf. It's such an important decision that affects a person's liberty.
And this is fascinating. And to reiterate, there was not a significant or perhaps any reduction in the number of people who showed up for their trial.
That's correct. The initial results are no statistically different change. Interestingly, though, the category of defendants that had the highest failures to appear were those that had secured bonds.
Wow. So this looks like a program we should expand. Is it happening in this state?
I'm not sure that I would say that yet. This is first quarter. We're continuing results. As of July, we'll have 6 months, and we'll do it throughout the year. But we'll take the lessons we've learned, we'll bring them to other jurisdictions, and we'll move forward for a more fair and effective
system. It has captured the eye of the state, however. We are trying to, maybe there are other pilot programs in the works now.
There are other counties that are ready to move on. There's a big push for bail reform coming from a number of places, including our Attorney General Josh Stein is holding these statewide pretrial roundtable discussions. We held one in January. There'll be another one this Friday. I'm participating in those. And the goal is basically to do on a grander scale what we did in 30B, which is educate stakeholders, tell them about the options, and help them work towards implementing consensus solutions.
Tantalizing results so far. We will stay tuned for further and more detailed results. Jessica Smith, W.R. Keenan Jr., Distinguished Professor at the UNC School of Government. Jesse, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You can find links to the research and the project at our website, stateofthings.org. Talking about gentrification next on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.